Off the Ball.
In association with Air. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the Air Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're very welcome back to Thursday's Off the Ball. As always at this time on a Thursday, we talk to John Giles. Evening, John.
Evening, Nathan.
So it's a huge week for Spurs. Manchester United last night, Liverpool at Anfield on Sunday, and it started, well, it couldn't have started in better fashion, a goal inside 11 seconds. Yeah. To be honest, I couldn't believe the United team that went to Wembley last night with Matic and Pogba as the two central players, considering they'd had such success maybe playing Herrera in there and not having so much responsibility on Pogba's shoulders, particularly with a front four of Martial, Lingard, Sanchez and Lukaku. Was Jose Mourinho too confident, too open last night?
Well, you would expect, well, whatever he picked, Nathan, I would have expected better from whoever he picked. I thought they were very poor last night. Now, I wouldn't take anything away from Spurs. Spurs were outstanding last night. From start to finish, good tempo about them, good skill, totally outplayed a Manchester United team. But, you know, I definitely would have expected a lot more from Manchester United. I would have expected a lot more from Pogba. Now, you might be right, maybe they were asking too much of him, but if he's the complete midfield player, as Mourinho described him, then he should have been able to do a lot more. But I find with Pogba, when the game is very tight, as it was last night, I don't think his positional sense is good, Nathan, and he doesn't know how to get in position to receive the ball, so he was totally out of the game. He wasn't the only one. United were poor, but Spurs, I thought, were first class last night.
It does seem as though the better coaches are able to take advantage of Pogba's lack of discipline. Pochettino last night seemed to be able to get Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen into positions where they were always just tucked in behind where Pogba was, almost knowing that he wasn't going to track the runs.
Well, I mean, good players do whatever they have to do in relation to the opposition. And, you know, they definitely took advantage. Not just Pogba. I mean, he wasn't the only one that was at fault last night. I don't think anybody really played well for Manchester United last night. They went up to the tempo that Spurs set from the start of the game. As we know, they got off to a great start, but they never got to the pace that Spurs were playing at. Not just Pogba, I'd say the rest of them as well.
Mm. Like that front four for Manchester United of Martial, Lingard, Sanchez, Lukaku, they have the option of Mata, Rashford as well. It gets Manchester United supporters very excited. I'm just wondering what you've seen from last night, and if Pogba isn't that all-round midfielder that Mourinho says he is, and maybe if Mourinho's just saying that for effect, if actually he can take the risk of going with a front four like that and Pogba in the side against better teams?
Well, they've done it before. It's not going just with the front four. The team, no matter what position you pick players in, Nathan, they have to play well. And it's not all about tactics and who plays here and who plays there. It's the attitude when they go out on the pitch, regardless of what team he picks. And that just last night, they went up to the tempo that Spurs set. And that's your starting point. And they never got there. And as the game went on, Spurs got better and better. They got the goals, became more confident. And the best display I've seen from Spurs, I think, since they beat Liverpool in a few weeks ago, maybe a couple of months ago. So, you know, if they maintain that form, then they're going to get in the top four. But again, like Liverpool, they've been inconsistent as well, Nathan. You know, they haven't been a consistent team, Spurs. But definitely last night, they were up for it and they totally outplayed a Manchester United team.
Yeah, there have been several occasions this season where you would watch Tottenham and where you would watch Liverpool, particularly in that win over Manchester City, where you would think, at their best, they're at a par with City. They just don't seem to have that level of consistency. They don't seem to be able to have that relentless nature that City have and put together a string of 11, 12 wins. Why is that when you watch them play? Is it the style of play that the two managers implement?
No,
is it a lack of resources?
They don't have the same players as City. I haven't seen Manchester United or Spurs this season particularly play anywhere near as well as Manchester City have played on a consistent basis. Now, Manchester City have better players. They're probably being coached better. Their attitude is great week in and week out. But they do have the great players. And I think they've got better players than either Manchester United or Spurs or Liverpool, for that matter. Mm. So, ultimately, it comes down to the players you have, Nathan, and how they perform and their attitude.
Liverpool then at Anfield this Sunday. It was a tough afternoon for them at Wembley, particularly for Dejan Lovren, who made a couple of terrible mistakes, ended up getting substituted before half time. Have Liverpool improved in the 2-3 months since that game?
They've improved on occasions. I mean, I'm fascinated by the weekend's match between Spurs and Liverpool because the two of them are inconsistent. I mean, 2 weeks ago, Liverpool played exceptionally well against Manchester City, the only game that Manchester City have lost this season in the Premier League, and they deserve to win it. The following week, they got to Swansea and they're beaten. I know they won the other night. They were beaten by West Brom in the Cup.
Mm.
I mean, they just have their highs and their lows. They don't defend. They defend very, very badly. So for different reasons, I think Liverpool have been very inconsistent and Spurs have for different reasons.
So it's
a fascinating match at the weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, so much of the season with Liverpool has been spent talking about the goalkeeper, the defence, the mistakes that they made, and also raving around the brilliance of the front three. Very little said at times about the midfield and the players and the quality of Henderson, Chan, Wijnaldum, Oxlade-Chamberlain. Is that the area that Jurgen Klopp now needs to be looking in the summer to improve if they are to have any chance?
No. He's got to improve the defence. Nathan, that's his starting point. God, they're dreadful defending. I don't think he's any idea of how to defend. Well, what I've seen at Liverpool, they're so bad defending. I mean, even in the Manchester City match where they deserved to win, but they lost three goals as well in the match. You know, and it happens week in and week out with Liverpool. They can be brilliant, absolutely brilliant going forward. I don't think they're particularly creative in the middle of the field. They're adequate in the middle of the field, but dreadful at the back. In Spurs' case, Spurs are very, very good at the back and they're very good at the front. They're not particularly good and don't have really creative force in the middle of the field, although they played exceptionally well the other night. So the inconsistencies are for different reasons.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about Manchester City then. So a 3-0 win over West Brom. But again, some pretty rash tackles on players. Matty Phillips on Diaz in the closing moments could have easily been a red card, was a yellow card. James McClain throwing himself full-blooded at Kevin De Bruyne in the build-up to the goal. Again, gets away with a yellow card. And this followed what happened against Cardiff in the FA Cup at the weekend, where Leroy Sané picked up a pretty nasty injury and is going to be out for 6 weeks. Are we seeing teams take a different attitude to Manchester City? Frustration kicking in quite quickly for opposition teams and just trying to kick them off the park?
Well, I think you will get an element of that where teams get frustrated about them. I haven't seen anybody who tried to kick them off the park, but I've seen a few bad tackles. Dele Alli had a bad tackle. As you say, Sané had a bad tackle against the other day. And I do think they need a bit more protection. I think it's going to be difficult for the referees because players do and teams do get frustrated against them because they're usually outclassing them. Nathan, and they think, okay, we better go in and have a go. So I think that I think Guardiola is right in bringing to the notice to the referees that they do need a bit more protection.
Mm. Neil Warnock came out after the game against Cardiff and said, "We're in England. You're going to get challenges that." Like, is that part of it, that the rough and tumble of the Premier League is players throw themselves into challenges a little bit more than they would in the continent?
I don't think so, actually. Don't forget, we've got 50% of continental players playing in the Premiership. That's Warnock. That's typical Warnock reply to anything like that. You know, he's that type of character. And he said, "Oh, yeah, but don't forget you're in England," as if you're allowed to kick lumps off people because you're playing in England, which is total load of nonsense. But I think in the Premiership generally, you know, the referee's got a grip of it. You know, they see tackles, yellow card straight away, Nathan. I think, generally speaking, the standard of the physical aspect of it is not what it was where you say, "Oh, England, they get stuck in better." I think that those days have gone, to be quite honest.
Mm. Kevin De Bruyne's performance again last night, he was just exceptional. Final ball, shots and goal, dropping deep to pick it up, starting off attacks. Has he taken his game to another level again over the past couple of months?
Well, certainly this season, I think that's a Guardiola effect as well, who would be encouraging him, helping him to get into better positions that he has done before. And also, I think he's 26 now, Nathan. And at that age, you know, you should be coming on to your best as a mature player. Because when he was at Chelsea a few years ago, I don't think he was able to handle it. But now he has, and he's doing brilliant. Well, he has been the outstanding player in the Premiership this year, in my opinion. But I think Guardiola's influence would be there. and also the fact that he's now around 26. So he's got a good bit of experience. And you need experience to play in the position that he's playing in the way in which he's playing.
You know, what is it that he has in that position? Is it the awareness of what's around him? Is it his technical ability, his range of passing?
Yeah, well, it's all of that, plus the mentality, Nathan, to take the responsibility. I think when he was younger, he didn't have that mentality. He was just an extra on the pitch, and Mourinho didn't fancy him at all. He got rid of him. But now that he's 4 or 5 years older, I'd say the mentality would be there to do what's needed in the middle of the pitch, because that's a very, very responsible position where you're knitting the back to the front and taking responsibility. And he's doing that. I don't think he was able to do that 4 years ago. And I think with Guardiola's help and also his own maturity, then he is a very, 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 very good midfield player.
Do enough managers give players that responsibility? You're saying it's so difficult to knit defence into attack, and so often now we talk about that sort of traditional holding player whose job is to play the simple 10-yard ball and maybe give it to the more creative players, whereas in De Bruyne you seem to have somebody who can do it all, who can drop deep, who can be the outlet for the right back or the left back, but who can pass at 80 yards, who can get sprint forward 40-50 yards, will pop up at the end of moves as well. It seems though not many managers are giving midfielders that opportunity.
Well, there's not many De Bruyne's around. You'd have to have the player to have the ability to give them responsibility as well. I mean, if you look at Liverpool, for example, they don't have a creative player at all. There's not that many creative players around in the game, Nathan. You know, if you look at Manchester United, Matic does a bit, Pogba does a bit. But look at Liverpool, Henderson. They don't have a creative player.
Could Pogba do what De Bruyne does? Could Pogba do what De Bruyne does?
No. No, nowhere near. It takes a lot to do what De Bruyne had done. First of all, it's having a positional sense. I mean, you don't hear people talking much about positional sense, which is one of the most important things of the game. Positional sense is when, say, the fullback's on the ball in Manchester City's game, De Bruyne makes himself available to get it and makes it simple for the fullback. Actually, Pogba actually runs away from good positions. That's why you don't see him in the game so much, because he doesn't really know where to go in relation to where the ball is. Now, when he gets on the ball, sometimes he's very attractive and can be very attractive on the ball. But it's no good having all that ability if you don't know how to do it. And it's not such an easy part of the game. De Bruyne can do it, and he can do it extremely well. But if you look around the league, Spurs, for example, don't really have a creative force in the middle of the field. Spurs are very good at the back and they're very good at the front, but they don't have that much creative element in the middle of the field, whereas Manchester City do. And to be fair to Guardiola, when De Bruyne is on the ball, he's always got somebody to pass the ball to, because that's the way he wants them to play. But there aren't many players. Actually, when you think about it, Nathan, if you look at De Bruyne, who else could you say in the Premiership does it really well in the middle of the field?
Yeah, David Silva.
They're not around those players.
Yeah. So Manchester City, Leroy Sané out for 6 weeks, and these things happen, players get injured. But Manchester City's response is to go out and try and spend £60 million on Riyad Mahrez to bring him to City. It didn't happen in the end. They did go and sign another centre-back, Laporte, who looked pretty impressive last night, almost £60 million from Athletic Bilbao. But the Mahrez deal, were you surprised that City were willing to invest so heavily in a player so quickly just because of one injury? Or actually, when you look at the squad, do possibly they need somebody like Mahrez, thinking of trying to win a Champions League?
Well, I think you can't have too many good players, Nathan. And they at the moment, they're still in for four trophies. You know, Mahrez is a very, very skillful player. I think he probably would fit into the Manchester City team. But he does need a big squad of players. I mean, if you're going on four fronts, which they are, then you need a lot of players in there. And money doesn't seem to be any object to them anyway, Nathan. So Mahrez would have been, I think he would have been a good player for them, especially with Sané out now for a few weeks and the matches they have to come.
The question now is whether Mahrez can be a good player for Leicester for the rest of the season. A friend was quoted today as saying Mahrez is depressed by the fact that the transfer didn't go through. We saw this last season where he didn't get a move and he seemed to throw his toys out of the pram, never got near the level he got when he was being nominated for Footballer of the Year. He seemed back to his best this season. Would you worry now for Leicester with the sort of destabilising impact that Mahrez could have?
Well, definitely. I mean, he's gone missing, I think, at the moment. And I read the article this morning, Nathan, and you'd think he was treated dreadfully badly by Leicester, and he was a total victim. Now, the fact is, he's on 100 grand a week, and he's got 2.5 years left on his contract. So I wouldn't be feeling too sorry for him, to be honest. I mean, he has an obligation. If he signed a contract, whatever it was, 4 years ago, a year and a half ago, for 4 years, then he signed a contract for 4 years. You can't just lay down your tools just because Leicester won't let him go. Leicester have their own thing to do. And the fact he's gone missing, he doesn't want to play. I wonder, is he giving his 100 grand a week back then, if that was the case? I would doubt it.
I would doubt it as well. I did just wonder, maybe even from Leicester's point of view, and I think with the way the transfer market was gone, they were perhaps looking at the fee Coutinho had garnered for Liverpool and trying to compare him to Mahrez and wanted up 85, 90 million. But knowing the way he acted last year, maybe once this deal had gone as far as it had and Mahrez had handed in his transfer request, made it clear he wanted to go, maybe the better option is just to let the player and set him free and take the money if he's not going to make a positive impact when he returns.
Well, it's difficult, Nathan. I mean, if you sign a player on a four-year contract and he's got 2.5 years, I mean, Leicester have their own business to look after. You know, if you sign a contract, you sign a contract, and there should be a bit of honour about that. I mean, he should be playing, and Leicester, you know, have him under contract, so it's up to them, you know, to look after themselves. And I don't think they need the money. You know, they want to keep Mahrez there. They've done well. They've done well for each other, you must say. But I don't think you can just lay down tools just because the club won't let you go. I don't agree with that. I mean, I heard somebody, I think it was Jamie Carragher and Neville on the phone today. On the telly today. And I think it was Neville's making the point. Actually, he should sack his agent.
Yeah.
Mahrez. Because if he's really looking after him, there should have been a buyout clause when he signed the contract. And I think at the time when he signed the contract, I think Leicester would have been glad to get 60 million for him.
Mm.
Whereas now it's changed all around. But he should be blaming his agent for giving him bad advice rather than Leicester for not letting him go. Because they haven't reneged on their part of the deal. They signed him for 4 years. And as far as I know, they're paying him his 100 grand every week.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be feeling sorry for him. Let's put it that way.
I don't think too many are somehow. Stay with us, John. 53106 is the text number. If you have any texts for John Giles, do get them in.
Off the ball.
In association with AIR. Don't miss live and exclusive Premier League action this month on the AIR Sport Pack.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome back to Off the Ball. John Giles is still on the line. John, I do fear we're going to end up talking about VAR every single weekend, but it caused a lot of controversy in the FA Cup last weekend. Thank God, in many ways, it hasn't come in the Premier League so far. Even watching last night, there probably would have been 8 or 9 different incidents. The Liverpool-West Brom game was a lot of the focus at the weekend, where there just seemed to be stoppage after stoppage in the first half. Was ultimately that a sign of the negative aspect of VAR, that it can be too disruptive to a game?
Well, you've got to give it a chance, Nathan. They've only been going on for a couple of weeks. Now, I must say, I'm a fan of the new technology, and I think they will get it right. I think there's a lot of negativity about it. I think there was on Saturday with the two matches that were on the television. I thought the commentators, particularly in the Liverpool match, were very, very anti the technology, and the commentator at the end was going on about the delays and all the various negative things about it. But he did say at the end of it, he said, well, I must say they got all the decisions right.
Mm.
But that's what it's about. You know, he was saying as if, by the way, that's the most important thing. Of course there were delays, there was various things in it, but they did get all the things right. Now, it's early days, and there's a lot to be done with it. I think they'll have to get the screens in the stadium for the supporters. That's one thing. And I think what they will have to stop is the players surround the referees now, like they have done all the time over decisions, which they did at the weekend. But definitely it's a positive. And I think they will get it right as time goes on. And there was a perfect example of the next day with the Cardiff-Manchester City match where they didn't have the facilities at the ground to use the technology.
Yeah, there was no VAR.
I don't know if you watched it, Nathan, but Silva, Bernard Silva, came inside and hit a whopper of a left foot past the goalkeeper. And the linesman, and this is what happens when you don't have the technology, gave offside for I think it was Sané, interrupted the vision of the goalkeeper, and the ball went in the back of the net. But they were able to show on the replays on television within a very, very short time that Sané was actually onside.
Mm.
But the goal was disallowed. Now, Shearer, I know Shearer's gone on saying he's very anti-technology, and he was asked in a joking way, I think, by Lineker. Well, what? He said, oh, yeah, they got that spot on. Well, if they had the technology on the night, that goal would have stood.
Yeah.
That's the difference, Nathan. And it was proven that it would stand. It was a bad decision by the linesman, or the linesman from that position he was in. You know, God Almighty shouldn't have been able to tell whether Sané was in an offside position or not. But the fact was, he wasn't in an offside position, so the goal should have stood. But the goal was disallowed. So I'd rather have the technology for taking a bit of time at the moment, which will improve, than having decisions like that. It was a perfect example.
It certainly looks as though the Premier League have made the right decision to just hold fire for a little while and let the FA Cup and the League Cup make the mistakes,
yes,
and suffer through the teething issues. To be honest, I was quite surprised by the outcry after the Liverpool-West Brom match. I hadn't seen it live, watched it back, and was expecting something very different because, as you say, ultimately, they got all the decisions right. It does
all
seem as though, yeah, maybe one of the issues is that sort of historical wall of silence that surrounds officials, that they never explain themselves. And again, going back to the comparison with rugby, if you get to a situation where there are big screens in every ground,
yeah,
showing what's happening, you're probably going to have to mic the referee up so,
yeah,
that they can actually explain what's happening to the players, to the official, to the management teams, and to everybody in the ground. Because one of the issues, I think, surrounding the Liverpool-West Brom game is that because the players don't know what's happening, it turned into complete chaos for about 15, 20 minutes. Suddenly there was an edge and attention to the game that wasn't there because there's 5-6 minutes of everybody surrounding the referee, surrounding the officials, and nobody getting an answer.
It's easy to stop that, Nathan. When they get this going properly, the players from habit, when there's this decision made by the referee that's a bit doubtful, they gather around him. Now, when the decision was made the other day to go to the VAR, the players didn't even know what the referee was going to the VAR for, but they automatically got around him anyway. I'm talking about particularly the West Brom players because the decision went against them. But there was a goal in it where somebody was offside. Nobody could see it. I couldn't see it. Anybody couldn't see it. I thought it was a perfectly good goal. But as soon as the referee called for the VAR, because he would have got word from upstairs, the players gathered around him. And they didn't know what was going to happen, didn't know what was happening. I think what they've got to do in the future, one of the things they have to do, which there's a few good things to improve on, is that when that referee calls for the VAR, if a player approaches him, the least they'll do is book him.
Mm.
And I would suggest send them off. There's nothing to do with the players at that particular stage. But they've got into the habit of going to the players if there's any doubt about something. This is a new game. And this will get better and better and better. They've only had it going for 3 or 4 matches, Nathan. And so far, especially of the weekend, all the decisions were right. And when they didn't have the VAR, the very next day, the one big decision was totally wrong that the VAR would have corrected. So it's early days, and it wasn't great in the rugby when it started, I'm sure. There are teeth and problems. But isn't it better to wait for a few minutes and get the right decisions? And as it improves, they'll get the big screens on. There's no doubt about that. And the supporters then will know exactly what's happening. But give it a chance.
If and when it does work properly, then it does look as though it should be a real positive thing for attacking players, particularly looking at that Liverpool penalty, which was the sort of incident you probably see 5-6 times in every game and you never really notice it and the referee never really notices it.
Exactly.
Free comes in from distance, there's a little tug in the jersey and everybody moves on. It's not an issue. Whereas now that they've an opportunity to go back, suddenly defenders are going to realise, managers are going to realise very quickly, we're not going to get away with any of these little sly, niggly fouls anymore.
Exactly. And what they'll do too, you know, all the pulling and pushing around the goal mouth for corner kicks?
Yeah.
They'll eliminate that as well. You see what happened on Saturday when Salah was involved in the penalty incident. Of course the referee didn't see it because the ball was on the other side of the field. And actually, it wasn't a little tug of his jersey. He had his arms around him. Now, you'd have to say there, Nathan, if the ball's on the other field and Salah's, what is his arms around him for anyway? Because I think the general opinion was, well, Salah went down very easy, which he did. But why give him an excuse? Why would a defender, when the ball's on the other side of the field and Salah's making a run, or anybody else for that matter, why would he have his arms around him anyway? So what will happen with giving that decision? The manager of Liverpool or any other team is going to say to the defender, if they're in that situation, whatever you do, don't put your arms around him. So stop all this nonsense that's going on about the pulling and pushing the players. It's definite positive. I really can't understand anybody that objects to it.
Yeah, just before we wrap up, John, just going back to that midfielders discussion we were having and Kevin De Bruyne and maybe similar players, and as you're saying, he's certainly the outstanding one in the Premier League. The likes of Christian Eriksen, Moussa Dembele, a couple of people wondering, are they towards that level?
No. First of all, Eriksen is not actually a midfield player, Nathan. He's a player that actually is more forward than midfield. He comes back occasionally, but he doesn't dictate play in the middle of the field. Dembele does better on one side with his left foot, but he doesn't dictate the play in other parts of the ground. He's a good dribbler. He runs out of steam very, very easily, I think, and he doesn't have much discipline. So there's a couple of things not there. He's a useful player, all right, but definitely the other lad, Eriksen, is not what you would call a midfield player in the De Bruyne mould.
Yeah. John, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Nathan.
The News Talk app is News Talk in your pocket. Download it now.